First and foremost, happy Halloween, everyone.
Happy Halloween.
Not quite Halloween
or
yet,
Harvest
but it will be
Fest
soon.
Whatever you celebrate.
This is Gabrielle.
This is Carmen.
This is Kafala.
And this is Ariana. And also, this is America, episode 4 of season 1. Woo! Yay!
That's an amazing accomplishment.
We're very excited.
We're moving.
We're very excited for this episode. Obviously, we're so glad that you guys are listening in once again. And this week is an interesting topic because I think this one's just a little bit more personal. We're going to be talking about how race and ethnicity plays and has an effect on our just like day-to-day relationships with people and our friendships and, you know, our even our teacher and student relationships as well, boss and worker relationship, just in general, like any type of relationship that we face, you know. So this one is just a little bit more deeper, and we're really going to focus on just, you know, whether or not we are actually, you know, are the same with everyone, you know. So I wanted to start off this conversation just on whether or not you guys all think that you are the same person when it comes to all your friendships and relationships.
I think I'm the same with all my friendships. I think when it comes to family, like my parents, like I know because I'm their child, I have to act in a certain way. I can't talk like how I would talk with my friends as far as like, you know, just saying things that are out of control or anything like that. So like I talk away with my parents, try to treat them with respect, but still understand that I'm the child and that they are still above me.
Yeah.
And I think like it all comes down to like comfortability.
I don't think that's a word.
That's a word.
Comfortability.
Comfortability.
I mean, I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, we get what you're saying though.
Yeah, you got it, Kafala. Leave that in.
Let me start over. Damn, what was I about to say?
But I totally agree with what you're saying, Kafala, for sure. When I'm around my parents, I definitely am. I'm not as like crazy or like, you know, I don't want to say crazy. I think that's not the best way to phrase it.
Yeah.
But I'm not not the way that I am with you guys, just because that's not the way you act around your parents. Like things that we talk about, things that we laugh and joke about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not appropriate. Mm-hmm. But when you're with your friends, it's completely different. And I would even go to say that I do act different with you guys than how I do with like my two best friends from high school. Like it's just like a different dynamic.
Yeah.
And I think that's with everything. Like, if your dynamic is different, there's no way that you can be exactly the same person in every situation.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Like, especially with race, like, my white friends versus my black friends, I act more comfortable with my black friends than I do with my white friends. Mm. You kind of have to be careful what you say around white people because, you know, you just want to keep a good image of yourself and your community. So, yeah, I definitely agree that you definitely carry a different personality with different people.
For sure. And, I mean, this is not, you know, for us to say that, you know, white people are overtly sensitive. But I think there's this sense of just safety and this sense of, like, belonging when it comes to speaking with, you know, people of the same race and ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
Because they understand you. It was something that, you know, Gabby had, you know, we've talked about earlier, was that like there's just this sense of like comfortableness and this sense of like understanding that, you know, each race knows where we're coming from.
Yeah.
And the struggles and everything like that. And so for us to be able to be in a environment where we feel safe enough to be able to talk about the tribulations that we go through, you know, it's always something that, you know, I appreciate. And this is not to say that I don't appreciate, you know, my white friends, because they give me this opinion and this side of society that I wouldn't normally see. And to, you know, and this is also not to say that, you know, white people don't have struggles as well,
mm-hmm.
because I think everyone can say that we all have our own struggles and our own, you know, trials and, you know, things that we go through. And so to have that difference in opinion and to have that different side of things, you know, it's always refreshing to be able to hear and to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, it's two different cultures. So,
yeah,
like, we're not all going to agree on the same thing because we have different backgrounds. And I think it's just making sure that everyone is comfortable like talking about a certain topic because you don't know how it's going to affect that person because you don't know like their background and what they came from.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And I think it's always nice. I mean, because like I always bring it back to this because we all do share this one thing in common for the most part, and it's that we're political science majors. So for us, we do have and we do share some of the same opinions and beliefs, and you know, we're pretty a pretty diverse group of friends that we have here, and we always talk about it, and we like the fact that we are diverse because you know, it doesn't really we all kind of have the same mindset, but we're also coming at it at different sides. So I always think that's important too. And I have to, I genuinely mean this in the way that I say it, but like, I think this is one of the first group of friends that I really do feel, you know, so comfortable enough to say, you know, my political beliefs with you guys. 'Cause I know that like, even if we differ in what we say and what we believe, we have the amount of respect for each other.
I was gonna say respect as well.
Yeah, it's just we really do have this great amount of respect for each other where we really just do not, you know, look at each other differently when we voice that opinion. And I mean, I really do appreciate that. I hope this doesn't become sentimental, but I think that's incredible for us to be able to bond that way.
That's something that I like hope, I guess, people listening to this or just people in general can learn to do. I feel like I see it so often in society, like especially on social media, people just like attacking one another because like even the slightest thing they say they don't agree with, the other person doesn't agree with.
Yeah.
And it's like, why, just because you don't agree doesn't mean you need to like, you know, go crazy and like block them on Twitter and like just be an insane person. Like, you can discuss your differences and still be friends.
Yeah.
You can discuss your differences and disagree, you know, but still at the end of the day, like have a relationship. You know, whether that's like a friendship, a real relationship, whatever. So I think that's a great point that you brought up. And I, like, again, I hope that people can work as a society. I hope that we can work to overcome that and better ourselves from that.
Yeah. And you know, it shouldn't just be about like friendships. It should be like about all types of, you know, people that you meet, that there should be just this mutual type of respect. And I feel like that's not really talked about as much in today's society as it should be. I think that everyone focuses more on just separating groups of people and groups of and like mindsets. And so for us to be able to work past that. And I mean, I know we all individually have people in our lives that are, you know, that differ from the way we think, but we still care about them. You know, like I have family.
Yeah. I was going to say, I see this most often with family.
Yeah. Right. So I think for, you know, people to be able to look past that difference and to just, and I hate using this because I hate it when people use it when in terms of like Black Lives Matter, but at the end of the day, you know, we all really are just, we're in this together. So for us to be able to work at this together and to work past differences and to create a more equitable and equal world is something that we could, you know, really benefit from.
I actually have a question.
Yeah,
so earlier we had a conversation, I told you guys some stuff I don't really want to talk about it here, but I'm curious to know, like, growing up as people of color, did you ever, like, were you ever friends with someone of another race and your family was like, maybe you should watch out for that person, or maybe you should find different friends, or maybe you should hang out with people more like you, anything of that nature?
I don't think I experienced that personally. I always like vibed with different races and everything. My mom was down for me to hang out with anybody. But you know, I feel like when parents say stuff like that, it automatically causes a division with your child. And then when you grow up, that child ends up like not liking this person solely because their mom told them to.
Yeah.
And then you kind of close yourself off on like opening up your views and like your culture. And so, I mean, I don't believe that parents should tell their kids to not talk to someone solely because of their race.
Yeah. I know for me, like same with you, Carmen, like personally, my parents didn't teach me that. Like, I grew up playing football, so I was surrounded by multiple people of different races, so I got to see a different side of them, and just like get to like not even just about their race, just getting to know them as people. And that's when I just became more comfortable with them. And I think like with relationships that are formed, I think it's just time that gets built. I know like with you guys, the reason why I'm comfortable with you is because I speak to you guys either every day or every other day. So I'm getting to know you guys. So you guys are seeing a side of me that like, you guys get to know my heart because you guys see me so much and you speak to me so much. So like with just growing up, my parents, they never really restricted me on hanging out with other people. They felt like as long as they had like some type of goals or showed some type of ambition of what they're going to do, they had no problem of who I was hanging out with.
That's a sweet Kafala.
It's a fourth time episode.
I totally agree. I don't think it was until I got older that, you know, it wasn't my parents kind of forcing it on me, but it was kind of like me learning from like societal types of things that I started realizing like that I'm different from other people.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's this misinterpretation that, like, you know, being racist is, you know, an inherent thing. No, it's, you know, it's taught to you. Mm-hmm. It's a mindset that is given to you and passed down through generation and generation. And it's a societal type of thing. So I truly believe that children are inherently, you know, they just don't recognize the differences. And, you know, and it's really not a bad thing. They don't see the bad in having a friend that's a different race or ethnicity that you are. And I think it's sad that, like, that's not more taught and it's not more publicized, because it's honestly one of my favorite things. And, you know, when I on social media, whenever I see, like, a video or a post of, you know, little kids of different races or ethnicities being able to interact with each other, it's so like, it really warms my heart. And it's something so like, just, it really makes my day whenever I see that, because, you know, it's not talked about enough. And, you know, as a world, if people want to use the whole term of we're just one human race, then why don't we publicize that more? You know, like, why don't we celebrate that showing of you know, interacting with one another. You know, we talk about, you know, our differences and the different movements that we create, but it really starts with the kids. It really starts at a young age.
I actually have another question that I was just thinking about. So I think being from the South, we have a different perspective than anyone else in the world, I would argue. Just because of everything that happened here historically. And so do you think that being where we're from, where we live now, even if you're not from here, would you argue that that plays a role into the way people see not only your race, but relationships with other races?
For sure. I think we kind of touched on this in the first episode, where I personally did not see race or like experience racism before I moved to North Carolina. So I think it was that move that really opened my eyes to the differences that we shared. Because before, I mean, like, I really did not see a problem with being different. You know, I didn't see a problem with someone being a different skin color than me. And it wasn't until it was, you know, presented right in front of my eyes that, you know, I recognized that, you know, society really, you know, goes after that difference and really perpetuates that onto us at a very young age. And, you know, this is not just to blame our parents or to blame, you know, the generation before us, but this is really just the system that you know, controls that type of mentality and sight that we have.
And I'm like, so it's interesting, Ariana, because I know you're from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of, you know, Hispanic people in Florida, Cubans, so on and so forth. Gosh, I'm not exactly sure where I left off there. We had to take a quick commercial break. But I was talking to Ariana about how she grew up in Florida and how there are a lot of, you know, Cubans and other such people that live there. So it's interesting that you made the comment that you didn't see people treating you differently until you came here, where we have less of that nationality of people or ethnicity of people. So I'm wondering, Kafala and Carmen, growing up in Charlotte, a bigger, more, you know, I would say suburban city, how do you think that affected the way people, again, see you as a race and you and your interactions with people of other races?
Personally, I don't think, well, you know, I'm from Virginia and I moved to North Carolina. And, you know, I've always known the South. So I didn't, like, until you asked that question, I don't think I realized that other states probably don't recognize race as much as the South does. For me, I don't think I ever felt like there was anything other than, like, a race issue. I've always known that, okay, there's white, there's black, and then there's Hispanic. And there's always, like, going to be a division between us. But, yeah, that's just how I think. I don't think that you can categorize which states recognize race and which states don't recognize race, because there's racist problems everywhere. So
yeah,
I know for me, like, same as you, Carmen, I grew up in Charlotte, so all my life I've witnessed this, just like different races being in this in Charlotte, and they refer to North Carolina as being the Bible Belt. And I know me, like, I went to a church that was predominantly white, and in Sunday school I was probably 2 out of like 10 students being black. And
really?
Yeah. And, like, even as a child, like, I just didn't feel as comfortable being in there, just because, like, I didn't feel like they knew who I was as a person. Mm-hmm. I felt like they were just trying, because it was a church, it was just a sacred place. They're just trying to keep me there. So I don't know how they made me feel comfortable or how I was able to relate to them, because there's things that they were talking about that I couldn't relate to.
Yeah.
And even as a child, which is weird, because I don't think as kids, like, we see race at first because we get along with who we get along with, just based off, because, you know, you're a kid, you're just like, ooh, let's have fun and stuff, and stuff like that. But, like, it's weird because just growing up in a state where, you know, there's race issues, and I know you can't compare it to other states, but, like, I don't know, just from my experience, it's just, I don't know how I actually was able to pick up that at a young age, which is weird to me. That wasn't really spoke about in my family either, so that's something very interesting that I took away from my childhood.
No, I can totally relate to that. Like, when I was younger, I did after school, and there was this one situation where it was like Christmas and we were doing the Secret Santa thing, and it was like you got a ticket and then they give you a gift that correlates with the number. And literally my gift was like streamers, and I remember me being really, really upset, and like they knew that I was upset, and they literally took me to the gas station to get, like, a pack of gum and a coloring book. And ever since then, I always thought, oh, it's because I'm black that I got, like, not a real gift. So I don't know if maybe, like, the after school was racist. I don't think that I saw racism when I was a little kid, so I think I just, like, was like, whatever, like, it was an accident. Yeah. But that leads me to my next question. Do you think kids see racism?
No, I genuinely don't. I really think that, you know, kids are taught that. I think it's a mindset that is, you know, pushed onto kids. Mm-hmm. I think that parents want kids to be and think the same way as that they do, so they can pass it on. It really is generational, and I said that earlier, but it really is. You know, I just think kids, they don't care. I really think kids just have something else on their mind, and
I think kids are just being kids, like doing childish things as they should. I don't think they should even be thinking about what makes them different from other people.
Why does it matter?
Exactly.
I mean, like, I feel like we asked this question in the first episode, and obviously we don't have an answer for it, but, like, why does it matter, you know, of with this different skin colors?
It's so funny that you say that, and I don't know if it was with you guys that I talked about it or with some of, like, my Arab friends, but I remember, like, growing up, even, like, as a kid, and when people would be, like, overtly racist around me, not, like, you know, just whoever it may have been, I remember thinking, like, why? Literally, it's just the color of its skin. It's literally like a dead skin cell, like, that's what it is. And, like, y'all are making, like, such a big deal about the color that they are, like, the color of their body, and I literally could never understand why it was like that. And, like, you know, with the question you just asked, I still, like, don't understand.
Yeah, and right?
I literally do, genuinely do not understand why.
It's confusing.
Yeah, for sure.
And they really do push it on us at such a young age. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get it.
Well, obviously, history, of course, there's going to be, like, a division based off that. And I think it comes down to, like, who you can trust. Because, I mean, I'm going to trust a black person more. I mean, really, I'm just going to trust a black person more than I'm going to trust a white person. Sure. And so, like, I don't know if parents have discussions with their kids about race or anything, but I think you just have to be careful. Because, like, you teach your kid, like, now we have to teach our kids, like, if you get stopped by the police, there's certain things that you cannot do. Mm-hmm. And so now you have to have that conversation with your kid about race.
Yeah.
And so I think it just comes down to trust, who you can trust in the community.
Yeah, like you said, because kids are, like, the most innocent thing. Like, they don't know anything. Right. So for them to, like, teach them, oh, this is how you need to act towards someone else, is really sad, because they're going to learn from, like, they're going to do whatever their parents says at a young age.
Yeah.
So they're going to take that mindset, continue to grow, and it's just going to keep building on from generation to generation. And it's sad, like, we can't be teaching this to our children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially at such a young age, where they should just be having fun and just getting to know people as people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone's seen the movie, but it's called 42, and it's a movie about Jackie Robinson.
A fantastic movie.
It is a fantastic movie. It's on Netflix if you're interested.
I know what you're talking about, but I have not seen it. That's horrible. It's about Jackie Robinson, right?
Yeah.
And we're black.
That's tough.
I was literally obsessed with him. He was probably one of my favorite players when I was growing up. But there's a scene in the movie, and it's when Pee-wee, and he was the shortstop for the Dodgers at the time, and they were still in New York, but they were back in his hometown, or like some, like it was an area close to where his hometown was, and there was a kid there, and he was like a big fan of Pee-wee's, and he was like, oh, I'm so excited to see Pee-wee. And Jackie Robinson gets on the field, and the dad starts yelling like the N-word at Jackie Robinson. It's the hard R. And the kid, he notices that everyone in the stands is yelling at Jackie Robinson. They're telling him to get out. They're calling him the N-word. And he starts saying it to Jackie Robinson. Mm. And I think that scene was just so powerful, because it really shows the type of, you know, just, what's the word? Like, effect and the impact that the adults... influence. Yeah, the influence that your parents and adults have on you as a kid, to where you feel that you need to say that, or you felt that you need to perpetuate that difference and that racist mindset onto people. He didn't even know Jackie, you know, like he didn't. And, you know, the scene is probably made up, you know, for just the movie. But I'm sure, you know, that kids still have this going on in their life
to some effect of that type,
right? And so, you know, I think that movie was just so phenomenal in the way that they portrayed that scene, because, like, it really it's not something that we recognize as kids. It is really taught to us, and as children we're so susceptible at a young age to really learn from our parents and to elders, because we were taught to respect them. So if we see, you know, someone older than us using that type of language and being that certain type of way, we think, oh, well, maybe we're supposed to be acting that type of way.
Mm-hmm.
As like a real world example, I saw this, like, I guess like a mini documentary. It was from Twitter, but it was like a YouTube video of a girl. They interviewed her, and her dad was like a high ranking member in the KKK.
Oh, wow.
And she talked about just like all the things she knew her dad did, and how, like, growing up, her dad always wanted her to be, like, I guess initiated into the Klan. I don't know how that works, because obviously, but initiated into the Klan, I guess, is what you would say. And she was like, I didn't want that. She was like, I knew even from a young age that I didn't have a problem with race, that I didn't want to be a part of this. But I felt like my family, I can't remember if she was part of the Klan or if she wasn't, but she was like, I felt so much pressure from my dad specifically that he was going to hate me, or he was going to disown me, or he was going to do, like, whatever to me if I didn't, I guess, follow in his footsteps in that regard. And so I think it does go back to what you were saying. It really, really is taught. And even if you don't teach it directly, your actions influence the way your kids behave from the very youngest of age.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think it makes me sad. I'm not going to lie. Thinking about that. Because I feel like we've talked about it at certain points where we've talked about us, you know, all having kids at one point.
Yeah.
And
not me.
Okay, yeah. All of us.
Everyone except Carmen.
Everyone except Carmen. But I feel like we've discussed how, you know, at one point we're going to have kids and how we're going to teach them. And I'm scared to teach them the wrong way. You know, I'm scared, you know, for me personally, I am more comfortable with Latinos and I am more comfortable with minorities just because I know that they're going to understand, you know, what we go through. And so for me, I'm terrified that I'm going to teach my kids the wrong way. I'm going to be pushing a certain type of mindset on them that maybe they don't want to have. But for me, it's like, I guess I see it more as a protection. Because if they don't have that, and if they speak something towards someone that they shouldn't be saying something, you know, what's going to happen to them?
Do you think that's a bad thing, though? Because if we, this is just like, this is just me being the devil's advocate.
No, yeah.
But do you think that's a bad thing? Because if we tell our kids that, they're automatically going to think, okay, white people are bad. And then that, again, causes a division between kids.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, like, that's the thing, though. I don't want to teach them that white people are bad. Because, honestly, I don't think white people are bad. No. I think the system, you know, colors them and paints them in that way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think white people are inherently bad. I think the system is bad. And, you know, I don't want my kids to grow up hating white people because mm-hmm. they realize that the system doesn't benefit them. Mm-hmm. So the question really comes down to, like, just how do we teach our kids to ignore the system if the system directly affects them, you know? And if we really don't have the power to change the system, then I feel like we're kind of stuck here. We're stuck in an endless cycle. I don't really get it. And, you know, we send our kids to school hoping that they feel this certain type of the safety and comfortable, you know, space. But even teachers perpetuate that type of hate and that type of mindset onto kids and students. I know for me personally, literally, this was just in high school. I had a teacher telling me that I wasn't allowed to speak Spanish because she didn't understand what I was saying. I had a teacher telling me that I wasn't allowed to have a certain type of opinion because it differed from hers. And I mean, like, that was just in high school. I can't remember what teachers told me when I was in middle school and when I was in elementary school. So, I mean, as a mother, honestly, I'd be terrified. I'd be so scared to send my child into a place where they won't feel comfortable to even speak. I mean, just speaking on, like, the education system, like, have you guys, like, ever experienced something within school that kind of pushed that mindset onto you?
Well, this is not a personal experience, but it's just something that I observed. I don't know if I've ever stated this, not that it matters, but I'm white, so okay. Anyways. I remember one of my really, really good friends from high school, we're still really good friends. I'm not going to, like, say his name, but he's Peruvian. And he's very, very proud of being Peruvian. His family came here from Peru. Like, you know, his dad is a doctor. They have their own home. Like, it's obviously something to be proud of. And I remember our teacher in our anatomy class, for some reason, I don't know why this was relevant either, but he would always call him Mexican. And I'm not Mexican, first of all. He's Peruvian. And even if he was Mexican, why does it matter? Like, why does it matter that he's Mexican? Like, there's no relevance to this class, to what we're talking about. So why are you bringing this up? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I just remember, like, thinking that every single time he would say it, and I would always correct him, even if my friend didn't correct him. I would always make the point to say, he's not Mexican, he's Peruvian. Like, get it right, it's not hard.
I'm sorry, that really triggered me.
It was triggering, you know? And it's like, I have such a strong, like, love for my friends. And so even, like, in that, like, if someone were to even, I don't want to say, like, attack, but, like, you know, say something like that, and they don't feel like they can stand up for themselves. Like, I can, I'll say it, I don't care. Like,
I mean, it's a lack of respect.
Yeah, it's 100%.
I feel like, and I feel like we talked about this out in the first episode too, where we said that, you know, we're not telling white people to not be a part of the fight, because I feel as though they play a very fundamental role in, you know, getting equality and equity within our system. And I think that's like a perfect example to where I feel as though minorities do and feel scared to speak up sometimes, because it's a position of power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, if we speak up, it doesn't really matter what we say, because they're still in that place where they have that power over us. I mean, and what could we say to take away that power? I mean, we're still, I hate to use this word, but we're still inferior. I mean,
personally, I don't think I experienced like teachers playing a role in race in like the classroom. I went to like a predominantly black high school and middle school, so like literally I don't remember like even seeing white people in both middle school and high school. Like, this UNCG was like the first institution where there was like other white people in other races.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, kids spend about 90% of their day with teachers, so if they were to say something about another race, it would definitely impact the way they talk to other people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I know for me personally, like you, I didn't experience anything like my teachers as far as racially motivated in their point. But like, I remember, I don't know if this was like an indirect comment, but I just remember like heading into my senior year of high school and talking to my guidance counselor and just letting her know my plans of going to school. And just signing up for like AP classes, for those of y'all that don't know, AP classes are considered like college courses. And she made a comment, was like, because it was 3 AP classes I was signing up for, she was like, are you sure you're gonna be able to handle that? And maybe I'm reaching, or I don't know, but like, I was like, oh, what do you mean? It was like, it's very demanding. Like, are you sure you're gonna be able to handle that? I know you're coming from a school like Harding where it didn't necessarily have the best background. And Harding was known as the IB school, which is basically kind of AP like, but it had a connotation for being a black school, being like a ghetto school. So I took that comment in stride, just thinking, oh, maybe she's just talking about the course load. But it's just the fact that how that comment of where I came from, how that's going to determine my worth ethic and how I'm going to approach in my next career. So like, that was the experience of mine that just really stuck out to me. I was like, wow, how can you make an opinion of me when you don't even know me? You don't know who I am, you know?
And I really don't think that's reaching. I think it's those microaggressions
mm-hmm.
that we really need to look out for, because if we really focus on it, and if we really try to pinpoint where microaggressions come from, we can see that they're so prominent
mm-hmm.
and they're so blatant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just absolutely, they're there. And we try to like push it off like, oh, they probably didn't mean it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Probably just looking too much into this. I'm probably just, I don't want to be that type of minority that just tries to find fault in everything that a white person says.
Yeah.
But no, like, if we really look at it, and if we really like take the time to see that and take into account that comment made, we can realize that, dang, these people really do see us differently.
Mm-hmm.
And they see us, you know, as lesser. And I think that's painful to imagine where we're considered lesser.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do you guys think like the onus is on us to be vocal about this? Because like you said, Ariana, the issue, like, I don't want to be seen as, oh, the race baiter, you got to make everything about race.
Yeah.
So like, do you think the onus is about us like speaking up and saying, hey, what, like actually questioning, why can't we do this? Like with your story, why can't I speak Spanish, you know?
You know, honestly, I didn't even fight the uh-huh. teacher that said told me that. I kind of just gave up when she told me not to speak Spanish. Uh-huh. And I regret that every day. Uh-huh. I mean, I genuinely do.
Because
uh-huh. I love my language and I love my culture. And for me to be able to hear someone that I should be respecting
mm-hmm.
and should hold to a higher standard tell me I can't speak my language, it hurts because it's like, why? I'm sorry, but like we talked about it earlier, but we said like we've said that people that are able to speak different languages and, you know, are bilingual or trilingual, they're, you know, they tend to be more intelligent in a way, mm-hmm. just because their brain works in multi, in a, like a, what's the word?
Multifaceted.
Yeah. So for me, it was kind of like, wow, like maybe I shouldn't speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. Maybe I shouldn't even try to. And I really, I genuinely will say that I really gave up and I didn't even fight on that issue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I think it's our personal duty to ask the questions why, because it helps helps people reflect on what they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when that teacher said that to you, she probably doesn't even remember that she even said that, or yeah. she probably said it in a way that was in her best interest. Like she wanted to understand what you were saying, but you couldn't speak in Spanish. And that hurt you. It made you feel like, and you know, like you were different from everybody else. But so, yeah, I think asking the question why helps people reflect on what they say, and mm-hmm. it helps them think on what to do better.
I also think it's our duty, if like, you know, there's like the kind of the policy that like if you see something, say something.
Yeah.
Like if you see people acting in a way that is not fair or inherently, you know, whatever the case may be, I don't necessarily want to keep saying racist, but you know, if that's the case, that's the case. Say something, be like, it's not cool to say that. Or, you know, like with the comment about speaking Spanish, like, I mean, low key, you're smarter than her because you can speak two languages, but
yeah.
like,
you oh, know I don't want to say that.
I'm just kidding. But like, you know what I mean? Like call people out when they say things that are inappropriate or like just simply not okay. Like, and that's the way I feel about it.
And I genuinely mean this. Like, I don't think every white person is racist. I really don't. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I think that there's a privilege standpoint.
There's a lot of bad apples that make everyone else look like
for sure
the same.
Yeah.
And I think people need to realize that this, you know, fight that we are going through for equity and equality, it's not about white people. It's not about all of them being racist. It's really just trying to be able to equal the playing field. And you know, within the education system, having those types of, you know, teachers kind of perpetuate that on you. You know what's great is that, like, I had that one teacher, but now I look back and I see all the other teachers that really stood by me, mm-hmm. and that, you know, loved and appreciated my culture, and that really they wanted me to show it. You know, I think that's something, because I feel like we, at least for me, I tend to focus on the negative people that affected my life.
Yeah.
But like all the positives that I faced and all the positive people that were in my life that have, you know, been so vocal and so supportive, you know, with my education, those are the people that we should focus on. You know, it's not about those negatives, it's about the positives. Mm-hmm. So like, I guess my next question for all of us would be like, have you had someone in your life, an adult or even just a friend, that you felt has caused you to really appreciate your race and ethnicity? That I think one of the best quotes that Kafala has ever said in my life was that your black is beautiful. And I'll always remember that. But like, I mean, has there ever been someone that you can remember that really pushed that onto you to remind you that your black is beautiful? It's powerful. I mean, it's a statement. I mean, that's a story in itself right there. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, it's a whole podcast.
I'm gonna let y'all think about that, but I'm gonna just like throw this in here. So my family is Irish, not my direct family members, but my, you know, great great grandparents and everything. They literally like came on the boat because of the famine.
That's awesome.
I
mean, not the famine. Well, yeah. But I mean, like, right, the fact right. Your family.
No, it's actually really sad. Anyways. They, you know, came on the boat here, and my great grandfather literally, like, his dad was from Ireland, and he basically worked his way to owning half of the town that he lived in.
Wow.
You know, with his job and like with between his siblings, But I think that's a really inspiring story, and it's sad now because, like, obviously they've sold all of that off and they still just have, like, the house that he built. Mm-hmm. But it's like he literally came, his family came from starving because, like, the potatoes literally wouldn't grow, to owning half a town because of everything that they, like, accomplished by coming to America. And I think that's really inspiring, and I want to continue that. And I am sure, like, you guys have similar stories, you know.
And, you know, just before we continue, I just want to make it apparent that there is nothing wrong with being white and being proud.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, and I think people need to realize that we're not saying that you can't be white and you have to be ashamed. No, you can be white and you can be proud. You can be proud of your family. And, like, that's, I mean, that's something that I really hope that people understand, that this movement of, you know, finding equality and the Black Lives Matter is not to shame and to guilt white people for being white. It's, you know, for people to understand that, you know what, we can be proud of whatever we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so awesome, Gabby, that, like, you're able to recognize that, that work that your family put into. It really is all about the work that our family put into making our lives better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we should really cherish.
I think that it's important that white people recognize why there's a division, because there's a lot of white people who don't believe that racism even exists.
Yeah.
Or white people who don't believe that white privilege is even real.
Mm.
And so I think that's what is more important, is recognizing, yeah, I agree, there's nothing wrong with being white and proud, but if you don't recognize what is at fault, then is a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
But going back on your question about who made me feel that my black is beautiful, I don't think it's down to one person. Mm-hmm. I think it's multiple people that make you feel proud of your skin. Like, I can say my teachers made me feel proud of, like, even being in the classroom with other black people. Mm-hmm. Is, like, such a privilege. Even, like, learning in African American studies in high school made me realize, like, wow, like, we've come a long way. Like, you can even go to school and learn.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you have your mom and my sister and my grandma, who definitely played a huge part in, like, learning about my history as much as I can, and why, you know, you should be proud of everything you've been through.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't think it's just one person who makes you feel like your black is beautiful. It's a whole community of people.
I like that you said that. What is it, what is that saying?
It takes a village.
It takes a village.
It really does take a village.
I think that's one of my favorite quotes. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly like you said, Carmen. It takes a village. I wouldn't just particularly just pick out one person. My whole family, my dad, immigrant, came from Sierra Leone, I think at the age of 20-something. And same with my mom, around the same age. And my mom she still works today as a CNA. My dad, he was a cab driver up until the time he passed away. And just basically instilling that hard work, knowing that although you're black, you're going to have to work twice as hard as everyone else to get that same amount of credit at the lower end.
Yeah.
So just learning from them, like, how they never complained. They always made sure to take care of their family first and foremost, even though they hated their job. They instilled that hard work, and you got to get up and do what you have to do. And that's just knowing from, like, being a black person, like, I have, no matter what I'm going through, it was always worse, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, just work hard, make sure you stick to what you know, and stick in the morals that come with it.
Yeah, and we are the example. Mm-hmm. Like, the lives we live now is gonna, like, fall back on, like, our history, and it's gonna play a huge role, because we don't get to learn about our history when it was slavery. We don't get to learn where our ancestors came from. We are our ancestors. We're creating this lineage for the future.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like how you said, you talked about your parents. Because I think that for me too, it's my parents really, they make me so proud to be Colombian Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's, like, I don't know if you guys know it, but there's this kind of, like, a stigma with Colombian Puerto Ricans that we're very prideful, exceptionally. And I probably perpetuate that all. I don't think there's a day that doesn't go by where I don't talk about Colombia or Puerto Rico. But I think, and I think, you know, my parents every day for, you know, giving me that type of mentality, because honestly, I'm so proud to be Latina, and I'm sure you guys all feel
should.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we all feel that type of way, where we're so proud to be black, we're so proud to be white, we're so proud to be Irish and to be, you know, Colombian Puerto Rican, that like we don't have insecurities within who we are because our parents wouldn't allow us to. And like, I think that's so amazing, because it really does start with your parents, and it does start where you come from in your house. And you know, I really do thank my parents every day, because honestly, like I know I struggled all throughout my childhood thinking I wasn't Latina enough. Mm-hmm. But my parents wouldn't let me think that. They always said that, no, Ariana, you're Latina. Nothing can take that away from you. Not society, not people, not even, you know, people within your own culture. Not even you. You are who you are, and you're Latina. And you need to take hold of that.
It's crazy to me, obviously, because I've never experienced this, but Ariana, you just mentioned it, and Carmen, I've heard you talk about this, you know, not being Black enough, or I don't know if you mentioned it in a podcast, I know we've talked about it, but I remember you saying either, like, in middle school or high school, people would call you, like, an Oreo, which, mm-hmm. first of all, is so offensive, but second yes. of all, mm-hmm. like, you know, you're not Black enough because you're white on the inside, or whatever, and it's like, that is so like, when you think about what those words mean, mm-hmm. man,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
crazy to me. Yeah. Like, absolutely insane.
Yeah. It's hard, because, I mean, I really don't know how to describe it. It really separates us as people. Mm-hmm. And I think we touched on it, though. That's what their goal is.
Yeah.
It's to separate us so we don't unite. And that sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, why does it matter? Again, it really comes down to the question, why does our skin color matter so much that we have to have this desire to separate each other? Like, I think it really comes down to, like, imagine all that we could do, all that we could accomplish if we united,
mm-hmm.
if we were able to get past that difference. I feel like, honestly, we could change the world. And I know that's probably just a optimistic type of view where, you know, oh, everything's all like sunshine and flowers. But like, honestly, really imagine the type of difference we could make if we just didn't care about the difference. Like, honestly, I don't care about our skin color like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, we're different, and I recognize that my privilege is different than yours. But, like, how can we work to better our society where we can equal that? Take away, you know, all the barriers that we have with each other. Like, why is it so hard to do that? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a privileged standpoint for me to be like, why? I don't get it. But, I mean, it's a genuine question.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Gabby, when you mentioned the Oreo comment. Like, I think, for me, it hurts more when it comes from people of your own race,
mm-hmm.
because it's like you're not being accepted. Mm-hmm. And so you feel like, oh, there's something wrong with me. I have to change myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This actually makes me think of a tweet that I saw pretty recently where it was actually like a picture from an Irish elementary school. And there were only two white people in the elementary school. Everyone else was Black.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And an Irish girl commented on the tweet, and she was like, our culture is dying, blah, 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 because there were Black children. But those Black children, they're Irish, you know? Like, just because you're Black doesn't mean you can't be Irish. Like, you're born in Ireland, your family is Irish, you can still learn Gaelic and be 100% representative of your country and have a Black, like, be your skin color be Black.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that tweet for so long, and I was like, this is not the reason why your culture is dying. I mean, there are so many other factors why Irish culture is like going away, but it's not because there are some Black kids in an elementary yeah. school. That has nothing to do with it.
How ignorant.
Yeah, it's so ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, I wish I could probably go back real far and find that tweet, but it was like, I again, like, I thought about it for so, so long, and I was like, There are a ton of different, like, color people with different skin. I've been to Ireland. I've seen people there who are completely 100% Irish, like, you know, accent, like, culture. They were raised there from birth, who were Black, who were, you know, like, Mediterranean, like, olive skin toned, everything in between. So it's just, like, it literally makes no sense.
That makes me mad. I have to say, like,
it's just so dumb. Ignorant. It's so dumb.
So ignorant. who are we to say what makes people Irish? Like, what, that it makes no sense. Who gave you the right? I'm like, I didn't know there was a rule book. Is there a manual somewhere? That, like, what makes an Irish person? Like, I don't understand it. And I think that that's a great point, because people really do say, like, oh, man, Irish people or Scottish people or just anybody in Europe, I feel like, they're like, oh, they're supposed to be, like, pale.
And I hate to break it to you, the reason why our culture is dying is because of other white people. Oof. That's a different story.
That is a
hate to break it to you, but...
We are for Irish and Scottish secession. Yes. Hopefully, UK Parliament, listen up. This is America's for that. But, I mean... ignorance. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something.
It's all what it comes down to.
It really does. Have you guys, I just had a question because I just thought of it. Have you ever been taught that, like, you really can't fight ignorance? Like, at the end of the day, you can't teach someone to not be ignorant anymore. Have you heard that?
I never heard that, but you can educate someone. You can obviously educate someone on what ignorance is and, like, what it entails, you know, so.
I have heard that argument. I've seen it online a lot. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the key is that they're willfully ignorant. You know what's happening.
That's a good word.
Yeah. You know what people are going through, and you choose to be the way that you are. You choose to continue to live in that mindset, and that's on you.
That's good, Gabby. That's really good.
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. I like that you said that. Mm-hmm. Snaps to
snap.
You.
Yeah, at the end of the day, people are going to think what they want to think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a choice.
Yeah, it is a choice.
It's sad that they choose that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I really think that it really does come down to that, like you said, that willingfulness. And I mean, like, I guess I don't understand it, because, like...
And the thing is that it takes nothing to educate yourself. I mean, you could literally go online and Google things if you have questions, or talk to people, your friends, your neighbors, your people at the grocery store. Like, if you wanted to educate yourself and you wanted to rise out of, like, the mindset that you live in, you would do it, but you choose not to.
Wow. And, you know, I want to point out that it's not just an ignorance within white people. Minorities can be ignorant too.
Yep.
And I can speak freely on that Latinos are prone, and there are, you know, it's a handful of Latinos that will forget where they come from, forget their culture, and will, you know, assimilate into white culture and just completely, you know, act discriminatory and prejudiced against not only themselves but against other cultures. I mean, in my opinion, do I think Latinos should be saying the N-word? No, I don't. I truly don't. If you're not an African descent, if you are not black, you shouldn't be saying that word. Latinos will say that word, but then they will talk crap about black people. Mm-hmm. And I hate that, because it really upsets me. And I just saw something on Twitter too, where it was like that. And I'm like, we are supposed to be in this fight together, but we are literally are the ones dividing ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what sucks. That's what really sucks.
Yeah.
How can we be united if we don't give a freaking, like, a crap about each other? I don't get it. It makes me upset.
And the thing is that, like, it's all the same suppression. Everyone is, like, in that, you know, I don't know the best way to phrase this, but, like, you're all being suppressed equally by the system.
Mm-hmm.
You live under the same suppressive system. So it's like, you know, people together have more power than people separated.
Yeah.
So it's like, you, I don't know why you don't, like, come together and you could stop it all.
Yeah.
But again, I think it goes back to even like that willful ignorance, excuse me. And maybe it's just even like, I don't know.
I mean, but that's facts, because, like, if you remember back then, Italians and Irish people were not considered...
They were treated like trash.
They were the bottom of the bottom.
Yep.
They were not considered white. They were considered different from white people. And, you know, when a lot of minorities started immigrating to the United States, it is when the Italians and Irish people were started considering to be white.
Mm-hmm. when the a lot of Asian people, Chinese, Japanese people came in, that's like kind of when the shift, I feel like you could argue when the shift happened.
Yeah, for sure. So like, I feel like I said it at one point, but it's only when it's convenient. And it's only when it's to protect the majority. Mm. And I think that's what, I think that really is what it comes down to. It's that protection of the majority and the protection of that power and the protection of that that mentality of supremacy. Mm. And, you know, I think that's what we're fighting, what we were fighting back then, and what we're going to fight today, and what we're going to continue to be fighting, is that supremacy.
Do you think that it will ever change? Do you think that it can change?
Honestly, and I hate saying this because I feel like it's pessimistic, but no, I don't. I really don't. It's a system. It's it's kind of like a disease, you know. It's rooted within us, and it's rooted within the system. And I mean, like, I mean, we'd really have to kill the system for it to change. And I just don't think that that's gonna happen anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I think people are just so set in a specific type of way that I just I couldn't imagine in my lifetime, in my kids' lifetime, it happening. And I hate that I say that, but like, I just don't.
Yeah, I think for people that are just willfully ignorant, like, they learn from who they were taught about these morals and stuff like that. So I think, just to play devil's advocate, from their point of view, they're thinking, oh, this is what I've been taught. These are my views. These are my values. Why should I change just because you feel this way? Mm-hmm. And like, even though I don't agree with that, you should always continue to learn and just to educate yourself. But like, if this is what you've been taught from the people you respect, the people you think are authoritative figures, you're going to go with their word because you're comfortable with them. You feel their word means something because they're not going to steer you wrong. They're going to tell you because they're
trust.
Yeah, there's trust. Exactly. Yeah. Perfect. There's trust.
Yeah.
So it's the onus is on people to actually willfully change, which is tough because people have been trying to change for years. It's not going to happen.
It's a great point.
It's tough. Change is tough.
Yeah.
So like, are you willing to make that change? Are you willing to, you know, educate yourself in order to learn for a better future?
Do you think that comes with higher education? Or do you think that it can be achieved without, I'm not necessarily a college degree, but, you know, I mean, there are a lot of white people even who barely make it past high school, and high school doesn't prepare you for anything.
I think we would have to start younger than high school.
Mm-hmm.
I really think it's something that, I think it starts younger than that. I think, I mean, really perpetuating a racist mindset starts at a young age. So for us to be able to teach children, you know, at a young age what, you know, race is. I mean, it's like what we're talking about the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they teach us that the Civil War was about states' rights. Obviously, that state right was about slavery. So for us to be able to stop sugarcoating and to stop blanketing, you know, our history is where it really starts. And I guess, it does sort of start. It does start at a young age. I remember learning about the Civil War in, I think, fourth grade, maybe. It's a real young age. So why not? I mean, I know racism is a heavy topic and it's not something that should be taken lightly, but hey, kids are more susceptible at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
So let's teach them at a young age. Let's, let's teach them. I feel as though children are coddled, especially in the United States.
Yeah. Preach it.
So if we really give them that opportunity to be mature within their thoughts, we can stop excusing their actions, stop excusing, you know, racism. It's like the whole boys will be boys thing.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah, we did talk about that last week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stop excusing things. Let's just be honest about where things come from. I mean, if we're racist, let's just be honest that it comes from, you know, society. It comes from your parents. It comes from whatever else. Let's just, from the education system, just be honest about it
and learn from it.
So not to shift the conversation too much, but I feel like someone we've, I'm just going to say someone, that we've left out of the conversation this whole time are Native Americans. And so I just wanted to ask you guys, what do you think we could do to better advocate for the people who were really here first?
I mean, do they even want us to advocate for them first and foremost?
That's a great point, actually. Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you think about it, how many times has the government failed Native Americans?
Every time.
How many times have we failed Native Americans? How many times has the media? How many times has something happened to Native Americans where we're like, oh, crap, look, this happened. And then within a week, we stop talking about it. Yep. I mean, honestly, do they need us? Because they didn't need us before. They didn't need us before we got here. And so for us to even assume that they need us now.
Yeah, and maybe that's like, I don't want to say ignorance on my part, but it's just like the assumption that it's like the assumption that they do need our help. Like,
yeah, who, that's a good question, though.
It's just like, I remember I had an interaction with someone, and you'll have to forgive me, I don't know the tribe, but it was one in North Dakota, and she lived on a reservation, but she was college educated, everything like that. And she talked about how if you don't have that education, and if you don't own a casino, your only choice is to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. Wow. Like, that's the life that you live there. Right, and I'm like, that is heartbreaking to me. Damn. Absolutely heartbreaking. Like, not only did we basically commit mass genocide to your whole, I don't want to say race, but like ethnicity, nationality, race. But now you live in squalor. Nothing. You have nothing.
Literally. And the government still treats you like trash.
Yep.
I mean, can we talk about, we'll probably touch on this next week, but we suppress their votes like it's nobody's business.
Yeah.
I mean, we're like, oh, you have to have an address. But we don't take into consideration that people that live in reservations, they don't have an address. They have a P.O. box. Yep. And we don't consider that an address?
Ridiculous.
I mean, come on. It's just such a blatant disrespect for people that were here before us and people that considered this land not even theirs to own, but a gratitude and a privilege to even be living here. And we took that away from them. That's just, it's sickening to me.
Yeah.
Because, like, look at them now. I mean, like we talked about very briefly, that the fact that they're taking out the Tale of Tears within textbooks. I mean, like,
just trying to rewrite history, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And that makes me like, dang, man, they were here long before us. And I truly believe they'll be here long after us. I mean, like, put some respect on their names.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Put some respect on
it. I mean,
it's crazy, though, that, like, you know, we spend so much time talking about the Holocaust, for example, and not that we shouldn't, because we 100% we should.
Yeah.
But when America does the same thing, it's like, oh, let's just brush that under the rug.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Japanese internment camps. Oh, that didn't, you know, no big deal.
If you really do think that Japanese internment camps were not similar to concentration camps, we have, that's a whole nother discussion.
That's a whole nother
discussion. I mean, like, really.
There again.
Come on.
Yeah, for real.
But I mean, that's so correct, because we do focus on Latinos and Asians and Black people, and there is a lack of focus on Native Americans, because honestly, there's a whole lot of crap that goes down between them and everyone else. Like, if we really did the research and the amount of shit that happens to them, it's crazy, and it outnumbers everything, because it's been happening so long before.
Is it because they're like underrepresented? Like, they're not really speaking up or anything like that?
I mean,
you feel like, because like you said, like, I don't know if they think that we should be able to help them, if that makes sense.
No, I completely understand. It's like, it's so hard to be like, I don't want to make the assumption that they want our help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like, we are here to help if you want it. Like, we're here. I know that we're here. And there's people who are willing to represent you, to help you in any way that you need. But again, it goes back, like, if you don't want it, I don't want to, like, push it onto you,
for sure.
You know?
I mean, it's like that whole thing that we talked about where it's like, we don't want to take away your voice.
Mm.
We don't want to be that voice for you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we want to help get you that platform to speak on your own. But, I mean, how can we? You know, show us what you'd like for us to do. And if that's just to be here as a support system and to back you, we got that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We can do that.
if you want us to be able to open the floor and open the door for you to be able to speak, we got that too. And you know, I'm so happy that you brought up that, you know, that this topic, Abby, because like nobody really does talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a sad part.
It is sad.
Because like this was their land. This was stolen from them. And it was stolen in a way that like,
and I mean, it's even no different than people, the, you know, like people in Latin America.
Yeah.
When the Spaniards came in and just, you know, literally like killed them all.
Yeah.
So
I honestly, I don't really know how to approach the topic, because I don't even want to speak for them, because I don't even know what they're thinking. Because mm-hmm. There's not just one type of Native American. There's right. so many.
Yeah. Yep.
So like, I couldn't even speak for all of them, because I'm not even one from here.
Mm-hmm.
So I really couldn't. But I think that's important to raise awareness, not just for, you know, Black, Latino, Asian people, but Native Americans. They are a forgotten people, and they're overlooked. And I think that if you don't know, we have several tribes within North Carolina. We have Lumbee, we have Cherokee. I mean, like, be aware of the Native tribes that we have here. Also, just a, you know, side point, do not call them Indians.
Mm. Mm. Yes, do not do that shit. I'm sorry, but that makes me so angry.
They are Native Americans. And if not even Native Americans, call them by their tribal names, please. Mm. Yep. Just show some respect. Indians is a term given to them by a murderer. If you don't know who that murderer is, it's Christopher Columbus. That's the tea. The gag.
Who y'all celebrate every September.
Yeah, who you guys all celebrate. That's actually Native American Appreciation Day, if you don't know. Mm. You know, this, I just hope that we're able to, I think the main goal for this podcast is just to really educate ourselves and to maybe notice how we perpetuate, or even if people perpetuate a type of mentality onto us
mm-hmm.
as, you know, we grow up, and maybe even how we can give our kids a chance to not be having a specific type of mindset that, you know, was given to us. This topic is kind of sad, and it kind of really does, it really resonates with me, because I mean, it's something that we've gone through for all of our lives.
Mm.
But I don't know.
I just thought of another question.
Yeah.
Do we have time left?
Yeah, we have time.
Okay. So I, you know, as a white person, and as, like, I often see, you know, the term, even for, like, the LGBTQ plus community, like, allies.
Mm-hmm.
So, what could your allies do
Ooh.
To better represent you, to better, I guess that's the best way to phrase it, but, like, what could we do? What do you want us to do?
I would say, well, for Black people, our allies are Hispanic people. So, a better way that they could do is kind of like recognize that they can't say the N-word.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of Latina people who still say the N-word, even in like high school and in college. So I think it's important for them to speak out and like let them know that, you know, you're not allowed to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you repeat the question, please?
Yeah. So I phrased it kind of poorly because I'm not really sure the best phrasing, but it's like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what do you want allies, whether that's like white people, whoever an ally is to you, mm-hmm. what do you want your allies to do in your benefit? How could they better represent you? How could they better stand up for you, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think white people can actually be Black people allies, because I feel like whenever a Black issue happens, action actually takes place when a white person speaks on it, and that's when things mm-hmm. start to shift. Mm-hmm. If you notice in like things that happen, like with the whole Black Lives Matter movement, it got really big when I'm blanking right now. I don't remember the specific celebrities that spoke on it, but that's when it brought more attention to other people, because I think when you hear from one type of group, like with Black people, it becomes like white noise, becomes, oh yeah, it's the same stuff. Yeah. But when you hear from a different point of view, it's like, oh, I didn't think about it this way.
For sure.
And that's when we're going to, and then maybe we should pay attention to it and actually do something about it.
Yeah.
So I think like with our allies could be white people, because at the end of the day, slavery and with racism, although racism isn't gone, it's starting to become better because white people speak up about it, and they're the one that's ultimately stepping up and saying, hey, this is not right.
Yeah.
You know, let's bring attention to towards this.
Yeah. I think anyone really could be an ally. Obviously white people can be an ally. Black people can be an ally. Asian people. I think even your own people can be an ally, because if there's separation within your own people, that can cause more friction between, you know, the fight. But honestly, you know, being able to be a supportive voice and to be able to be there to help and support, you know, minorities, and to help them get to that position where they can speak freely and to have that platform, I just think that that's so fundamental. Perfect example. Leonardo DiCaprio. What was the movie? He got a Grammy for.
The Oscar.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, she said a Grammy. The Revenant. That was one of his best movies.
Oh my! I'm so ashamed.
A bear attack. Oh, okay.
It was so good.
We're never gonna speak of it. Oh God, Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm so sorry. You should have gotten an Oscar before this. But anyways. That's the tea.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
I got some beef with that movie.
No,
actually,
I love that movie.
But he actually raised a lot of awareness for Native American tribes and for the environment. Mm-hmm. And he did it in a way that wasn't so blatant and outright. And I thought that was so cool to be able to see him work in that type of setting. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I'm not saying that people have to go make a movie now. I'm not saying, like, yeah. Come on, don't take this out of context. But like being able to be that type of representation that is not so like, oh, I'm trying to take your voice away. Oh, I'm trying to take away like your platform. But being able to give that, you know, unspoken and deliberate, you know, support is something that we really appreciate and desire. And like we've said several times now, but recognizing that privilege,
mm-hmm.
It's so fundamental. And I think that's amazing when someone can recognize that type of privilege and realize that, like, you know what? I do have it better.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that, you know, I'm not going to be stopped by the cops at a certain type of night, you know? Mm-hmm. And what happened recently, I'm not going to get shot through my bedroom window with cops, you know, on my property. I don't have to be afraid of that. But I think that's amazing. And I, you know, honestly, like, I don't say this enough, but I greatly appreciate having Gabby as a friend, because, you know, she is this amazing person that she sees her privilege, and she has never once try to force some type of voice on me. And I can say that for Carmen and Kafala and Rosa, she's never been that type of person. So to have that type of friend and that ally in my life is something that I greatly appreciate, and, you know, I'll never take for granted. You know, she's so great, and I love her.
I love you, Ariana.
Thank you. I really appreciate you saying that. It makes me I don't know, I just like think about it. I don't want to go into it, but I'll go into it for a second. people always ask me, like, oh, what do you want to do after you graduate? And I never really know what to tell them, because what I want to do is, like, I want to fucking help people.
Yeah.
I want to, like, I literally was thinking about it the other day, and this is, like, kind of dark, but whatever. I was like, I don't want to die and not have done anything to make the world a better place. Like, I literally cannot sit here and know that I didn't do anything to help people. Mm. And even if it's just saying, like, hey, don't call him Mexican when he's Peruvian. Or, like, whatever, like, I cannot, like, I just could not be happy with myself. I could not let myself go to sleep knowing that I didn't do what was right based on my morals.
Yeah. And I guess I just encourage you all, and I think we encourage you all to really surround yourselves with those types of people, whether it's within your work, your school, your friendship, even within your, you know, family system.
Also, just like a side note, your family doesn't always have to be your blood family.
Yeah.
So if you come from a family that is not supportive of you or teaches you things that you don't agree with, just know that, yeah, you might be related by blood, mm-hmm. but you can make your own family connections mm-hmm. with people who love you and support you and are mm-hmm. always there for you.
For sure.
Exactly.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to end this episode on a happy top, like a subject. But you know what? We wish you guys all well.
I love you guys.
We love our listeners. I'm going to get a little sentimental. I love you guys, though. I don't say it enough, I feel like, but I really do love my friends and my dynamic. This is a chosen family mm-hmm. that I have here. But, you know, I really do encourage you guys to seek truth, to really continue to find and educate yourselves, find, you know, that equity and equality. Never stop fighting for that. But this has been Ariana,
Gabrielle,
Carmen,
Kafala,
and this is America. Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a good morning.